Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook, everyone, for week number 4. Patriots and Miami Dolphins coming up here on Monday night. I almost started to say Sunday, but it is Monday night as we've been talking about this week. And we've got a lot to get to here on the program today. Eric Scalabino from PFW is with us. Eric, good afternoon. What's happening today?
Hey, JR. What's going on?
Happening? Anything good?
Not great.
Not great.
Not great. Not great.
Okay.
News, not great news from practice.
Do tell.
No Fred Taylor to start.
Hmm.
At least I don't know.
Maybe a little bit more to the whole his big toe story.
Yeah. Which is not, you know, we hoping we wouldn't that we could go through a season without his having to be on the injury report or even be, you know, missing at all from action. But
yeah,
already going into week 4 and he's starting to miss some time, which is a little disappointing. I mean, not to say he won't play Monday night. We got to wait and see, but just not encouraging news to start the Miami week off.
Here we go. I mean, you know, you've traded away Maroney. You've lost Kevin Faulk. We knew, I mean, you had to know that before the season started, you were going to lose one or two running backs because they're just old. Face it, they're old. By NFL standards, they're ancient. And obviously, Fred Taylor now is starting to feel a little bit of that wear and tear. And this is a very precarious position that could end up really shooting the Patriots, pardon the pun, in the foot before everything is done.
Exactly.
I mean, Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis, I love the kid. I think he's, you know, a dynamite player. He's not an every down back.
Well, I don't...
He's not an every down back, Eric.
I don't
try to start reasoning with me on this one.
You won't hear reason?
Well, go ahead. Give me one.
Okay. Guy rushed for 1,000 yards in the Big Ten 2 years in a row. Not 2 years in a row. I'm sorry. Almost 1,000 yards 2 years in a row. I think he was like 900 yards or change his first year, 1,000 yards the next year. 2,000
yards. Big Ten's a weak conference.
Okay. 2,000-yard rusher in the SEC. Is that a bad conference?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay. The guy can carry the ball every down. He just needs to do it at this level. He hasn't had the chance to do it because he's had first round pick in front of him. He's had a 12-year veteran in front of him.
I'll tell you what. Here's what we'll do. If he ends up in that role with the Patriots, I'll be happy to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I think the reason they traded Maroney was because they felt like they had a guy in Green-Ellis who can do that role, or else they wouldn't have taken the chance to get rid of Maroney.
Where did Green-Ellis play football?
He started at Indiana.
Right.
And then transferred to Ole Miss.
Ole Miss. Okay, that's what I thought. All right. Well, I'm just trying to think of the competition that he would have played.
Florida,
yeah,
LSU.
I mean, certainly in the SEC it would have been substantially more difficult.
Absolutely.
All right, you know what? Then that's fine. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I just, you know, like probably many other people, I haven't seen it yet. He hasn't had the opportunity yet. So let's see if he gets the opportunity.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay, fair enough. Anything else from practice today?
The usual Terrence Wheatley, Nick Kazier report is what I'm going to end up calling this thing from now on because it's not really an injury report. It's just those two guys mostly. Still not there, although Wheatley spoke to reporters in the locker room today. Typically a good sign that a player is on the verge of returning. So I was a little disappointed that he wasn't out there today, but maybe tomorrow or Friday, we'll see.
Well, you know, I mentioned a little bit on the show yesterday that I thought it would be really a surprise if he came back this week because they've got a chance not only to save him for this week, but now you have the bye week after that. I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, you'd want to keep him out for another week or two, get the extra rest before you bring him back.
Well, I don't know. If the guy's ready and you've seen what's going on in the secondary, then if you can bring him back sooner.
All I'm saying is he had best be really ready, mm-hmm. knowing full well that you've got your toughest three-game stretch of the season coming up after the bye week.
Yeah, 3 to 7 game stretch, I'd say.
Probably. Even more of a reason to keep him healthy.
Hey, Zoe, we're kind of on the air. So thanks for not swearing. Okay. Yes,
more
we
business
really are
on
air.
Yeah. More business to the studio today. Don't you just love how people plan these things right in the middle of this show?
Yeah, it's the typical foolishness we have to endure every week with the shooting TV things during radio time.
Yeah.
Very inconsiderate, but I've already warned them not to do it all year long. So
yeah.
We'll see
well,
if that
I'm sure that'll
on
fall on deaf ears, too.
So,
that'll fall on deaf ears, too, right?
I don't know. We'll see.
You think? Well, clearly somebody doesn't think very highly of us, so
that's all
at
right.
any rate.
We think
we'll
highly
push
of
on.
Us. So.
Yeah, that's true. We do. We definitely do. All right, so one of the things I wanted to kind of jump into today, in addition to what you guys were talking about right at the end of PFW, because quite frankly, I love that conversation. I was actually going to go a little bit different direction to open up the show today. And by the way, coming up in the second hour of the program, Andy Kent, who covers the Dolphins for Dolphins.com, he's going to join us here on the program, and we'll start taking a look at the Monday night game a little bit more detail from the Dolphins' perspective. That's coming up in hour number two. But with you here in hour number one, rather than go a certain way, what I'd really like to do is get fans' opinion, get our listeners' opinions on what you guys were just talking about. Where do you think, in terms of evaluation, and the reason that I want to go this route is because I saw an interesting article in this week's Sports Illustrated. It was actually written by Peter King. Did you see what was written?
No, I didn't.
All right, I'm going to surmise it briefly. But just to mention that he was talking about Kansas City and their start, 3-0, and the fact that Scott Pioli is now, you know, running the show there in terms of personnel. And his simple plan, according to the basics of what Peter King wrote about, were to ace the draft and then watch the wins roll in. That's it. His success is predicated on succeeding in the draft. And I think this also kind of ties in with what you guys were just talking about in terms of what our expectations are of guys who are taken high in the draft.
Right.
So to that end, let's go this route. Where do you feel like Pro Bowl players should come from? In other words, top 10, top 15, top 20? Should it be a rule rather than the exception? Are Pro Bowl players a crapshoot? I really want to know what fans' expectations are of high draft picks. And because the Patriots have done so much trading down in these rounds over the last couple of years, should we at all be surprised that we've struggled in terms of talent simply because we're not pulling in Pro Bowl caliber players?
Well, I'll tell you, I can start by telling you what my expectations are.
Okay.
If you draft a guy in the first round, 1 through 32, wherever, I certainly expect that guy to be a starter at some point, whether it's initially, whether it's during the course of the first season, whether it's, you know, a season later. I expect that guy to be a starter, and a starter for a significant period of time, 5-6 years at least, at the very least. Okay?
Yeah.
If he's drafted in the top half of the round, I certainly expect a lot more than just starting, particularly if he's a top 10 pick. I expect consistent starting production immediately and a few Pro Bowls along the way. I don't think that's too much to ask from a guy who's taken that high and given that type of salary, at least the way it's structured now.
So a top 10 pick should basically be worth how many Pro Bowls?
Well, if you estimate that the guy's career is, let's just say, 10 years, to throw a number out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I say at least half of those should be Pro Bowls.
Half?
Yeah. For a that top 10 pick.
Okay, all right. You're certainly entitled to your opinion. I just think the Pro Bowl is much more of a popularity contest than it is really giving credit where credit is due to players.
I think
and their performances on the field.
I think that's certainly the case with offensive linemen, because I think it's very difficult for people to judge the quality of an offensive line, a lineman's play.
Right.
And once one guy gets it, they tend to stick with that guy because people aren't really equipped to make a judgment on whether or not that guy's any better than somebody else. And it also depends, like you said, on how well his team performs. Like in 07, New England had three offensive line starters make the Pro Bowl, Copen, Mankins, and Light. And I think a function of that was the fact that they were 18-0 going into the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're absolutely right about that. Mankins, I think, legitimately deserved it. The other two, you could maybe question whether or not that was, necessary.
Right.
But certainly guys like, the guard from Alan Faneca.
Faneca? Okay.
For year after year. He started making them early in his career, and people just said, Alan Faneca, yeah, he's a Pro Bowler. Yeah, just year after year. Whether or not he deserved it is anybody's guess. Maybe he did, but he's one of those guys I think you can point to as an example where you just fall into this trap. It becomes a name. There are very few name offensive linemen, and the ones that get them typically tend to get to the Pro Bowl. I don't know if that's necessarily the case for other positions, though, like skill positions where there's obvious production stats that you can look to and say, well, this guy had X number of yards. He was 400 yards better than the next closest receiver. He deserves to be in the Pro Bowl. I think those are a little bit easier for people to make determinations on whether or not they go to Hawaii.
Okay. All right. Well, here's kind of what I think. I first of all, I don't really have a hard and fast rule to a top draft pick other than, let's say, you are a top, I would say, 3 to 5, depending on the team that you go to. I mean, first of all, just for playing the game here's sake, all right, let's say Oakland has a number one draft pick, and Oakland is just a horribly crappy team. And you've got a team, you've got a guy that's coming in to play on that team who really too much expectation is put on his shoulders to carry the load for a moribund, poorly funded, poorly managed football team. There's no way in hell that that guy's really got a decent chance to make a Pro Bowl. I just kind of think that, you know, there are different situations for different players depending on the teams that they go to. All right.
Well, sure, I'll grant you that. Yeah.
So because of that, I don't think that there is a hard and fast rule applying a draft or, you know, number two potential of a Pro Bowl player. That being said, I would think probably top 3 to 5 has a better chance and should stand a better chance of making a Pro Bowl or being a Pro Bowl caliber player. In other words, the expectations are increased. And if you want to throw Willie McGinnis into that, absolutely you can throw Willie McGinnis into that. And if you measure him by Pro Bowls alone, he might have been a little bit of a disappointment. I don't think most Patriot fans, however, look at Willie as a disappointment. Therefore, I believe that most fans would tend to side with what I'm kind of going at as opposed to what you're looking at and saying, you know, a top 10 pick has got to be a Pro Bowl caliber player. I just think it's so difficult to quantify Pro Bowl based on teams drafting for need as opposed to teams drafting a player who's coming into a hopeless situation. Does that make any sense at all?
Sure, yeah. No, it does. It does. I will grant you that point. That's a valid one, I think. If you're going to a terrible team, you know, most of the top 10 picks are terrible teams making those picks, with rare exceptions. It's going to be tougher for them to stand out if they're on a losing team or whatnot. But, you know, a guy like Patrick Willis has done pretty well standing out on a team that hasn't been that great lately.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
So I think it's certainly not impossible. And, if I were the guy making the pick, that's what I would expect out of him.
Well, I think if I'm the guy making the pick, and if I'm making a pick for a franchise like New England, I think that, yes, with all reasonable expectation, if he's a top 10 pick, if we're slotted somewhere in picks 1 to 10, that we hope to be able to get a Pro Bowl player. But the problem here is that a lot of these teams that have, you know, success year in and year out, let's talk about the powerhouses, the teams that come back and make the playoffs or at least competitive for the playoffs every year, they're not going to get high picks. So doesn't that stand to reason that, you know, they're not going to have as many potential new Pro Bowl players if they're drafting down the lower slots? Of course not. That's why this is such an imperfect science.
Right. But If we're looking at, okay, in general, okay, yes, you're right. But New England, when they took Gerard Mayo, wasn't one of those terrible teams. So they're one of the rare exceptions where a good team gets a high draft pick, and there's no excuse for him not to pan out. Right?
Okay. Well, especially since he was. Wait a second. Say that again.
Okay.
Now.
So
I want to make sure I grasp this.
Your premise is bad teams are picking in the top.
Yes.
More often than not.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Right. So it's more difficult for them to make inroads and to impress the NFL audience at large.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if a good team like New England, when they picked Mayo 10th overall,
yeah,
they actually had the 7th pick and they dropped down to 10.
Right.
So they could have gotten a guy at 7 if they wanted to, but they felt they could get Mayo at 10, all right?
Right.
If a good team is up in that area getting a blue-chip prospect, it should stand to reason that there should be a better chance for that player to become and fulfill his potential as a blue-chipper in the league because he's going to a good team, especially if he's being thrust into the starting lineup like Mayo was.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I see where you're going. You know, like I said, it's just it's sort of an imperfect science here. There's really two ways of looking at it. And this is kind of why I wanted to open it up for debate, because I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer here. What it basically all boils down to, Eric, and you know this as well as anybody, is a team's individual, needs, their individual team philosophies and how they go about it. Certainly, I don't think that a team that's not fortunate enough to have a top 10 pick is never going to draft another Pro Bowl player. But at the same time, you know, there could be, you know, teams that are drafting in that 20 to 32 slot, you know, and those are all, you know, playoff caliber teams, right? If you're drafting more from 20 to 32, you're
right.
A playoff team, basically.
Right.
They have every reason to expect that, you know, at least every other year, they should be drafting a player that not only, A, can come in and be a regular for them, but also, B, potentially be a Pro Bowl caliber player. I don't think that's too much for them to expect, even if you're stuck drafting in that range. And they probably don't mind being stuck, I'm putting quotations around that word, stuck drafting in that range, because what that means is they're having success on the field, and that's where it matters most.
Sure.
But there should be some reasonable expectations of having success in the draft. And I don't think a good team puts all their eggs in the draft basket. Nor do I think a bad team puts all their eggs, you know, in the free agent market or by playing, you know, skimpy with money or what have you. It's got to be a mix of the two. I just thought that Peter King's article this week in SI on the Chiefs and their sudden success and basically attributing it to Scott Pioli just basically going for broke in the draft was kind of unusual. And it also speaks, I think, volumes now to the way things, the Patriots are also doing things, because frankly, let's admit it, over the last few years since Scott Pioli has been gone, Patriots draft has not been terribly successful, nor was it all that successful in the last couple of years that Pioli was even here.
Yeah, well, that's fair. And I also think a name that doesn't get thrown out there as much that should is Thomas Dimitroff, who left to be the
to go to
GM
Atlanta
of the Falcons.
That's right.
And has done very well so far in his early tenure there.
That's correct.
Leading the personnel of the Falcons. So,
and we could probably rightfully throw him in that mix as well.
And I think we should more often.
Yeah, and we probably should. So we say Pioli / Dimitroff in terms of the Patriots' ability to scout and draft and select the right players, whereas you don't have quite the same type of input as you had previously. And all of a sudden, we're not having the same kind of success. You know, do we read anything into that? Well, yeah, I think we do. I really believe strongly that this is all a process of Bill trying to put a lot of this burden on his own shoulders, and it's just not working. And I believe that this was part of the problem that he had. Not all. He had a lot of other problems back then. But I think this was a contributing factor to some of the lack of successes that he had when he was in Cleveland previously. And I think he's going back to the future, unfortunately. Mm. And I don't like the way that the decisions are being made there that are trending this way. You know, he needs to have trust in people to do their jobs. And if he cannot trust people to do their jobs, and he said, well, if I can't trust somebody, I'm going to do it myself, that's when you get into big trouble.
If you start doing too much.
And I think he's on the precipice of doing too much. Mm-hmm. Whether or not you want to include his lack of hiring coordinators in there, or you know his wanting to control salaries, or you know drafting, I just think that you know, and of course the biggest problem of all here is the fact that we don't have any real communication with him on this, because every time the questions are asked of him,
yeah,
we don't get a straight answer. And so this again is part of the problem that he ran into in Cleveland. Was lack of communication with the media. I'm not saying you got to give us trade secrets. I'm not saying you got to tell us, you know, everything that there is to know. All I'm saying is that, you have to basically understand that talking to the media and dealing with the media is your job. You guys were talking about, you know, Sean Crable, you know, in the last half hour of PFW and the fact that he doesn't want to talk to media. I'll tell you right now, this has nothing to do with Sean Crable's desire. My guess is he really probably wouldn't mind talking at all. He's been here for, this is his third season, and he's only been on the field for now 9 plays, and they all came last week.
Right.
I'm telling you that I think he's being told by coaches, if not a couple of veterans, to keep his yap shut.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
And that his ability or inability to talk has nothing to do with his desire. And again, this is part of the micromanaging of the Patriots and the uber-controlling that the Patriots like to employ here, and frankly, it's starting to wear thin. It's not working.
Well, when you're not winning games, it certainly wears thin a lot quicker than
when you're winning games. When you're not winning games, everything is open. Everything is open for conjecture. Everything is open for criticism. Mm-hmm. Now, if this team somehow turns it around, Eric, you and I know this as well as anybody. This team turns it around, beats Miami this week, wins those 3 tough games coming up after that, and this team somehow finds themselves 4-2 or 5-1, somewhere along those lines, then you know what? I'll be happy to eat my words. Happy. But you know what? Based on the track record, based on everything we've seen thus far, it's not going to happen. And you can only see the reins getting pulled in a little bit more tightly over the course of the next few weeks as the competition gets tougher and as the results continue to go south. You're going to get less and less communication. You're going to get less and less honesty. You're going to get less and less forthcoming. I mean, you know, geez, not for nothing, and I don't want to bang EEI here, but those visits with Bill on Patriots Monday are going to be worthless. Worthless. Mm. You know, his press conferences here that, you know, we stream on Patriots.com, worthless. What are you going to find out about it information-wise? Nothing.
Very rarely.
That's what I mean. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous sometimes that you guys even have to cover it because he didn't say anything.
Hmm. Well, like you can glean info based on how
you
he
have
responds.
To glean. You have to glean info.
Like
you have
with
to,
Kevin
you
Falk.
Have to read between the lines.
Like with Kevin Falk a couple of last week.
Well,
when you know, the day after the game, when he said, "Yeah, they're doing tests on Kevin," and when we know something, that was as close as you're going to get to, "Yeah, he's done."
Yeah.
So you have to kind of glean from that, because normally it's like, "Oh, we'll give you the injury report on Wednesday."
Right.
So that was a tacit acknowledgement that there was something more than just a day-to-day type injury.
And of course, when a player goes down for the year, then obviously there's going to be something pertinent you want, you know, the coach to talk about it. I understand he is the head coach. I'm just saying that, you know, just watch and please, somebody, everybody who's listening to this program right now, please, you can bang on me all you want to in the coming weeks if this thing does or does not work out. But you also need to say, hey, Rook, you had it right. If these fortunes go southward and you start to notice, you know, the reins being pulled in a little bit, I'm telling you it's going to happen. Mike from Florida is with us here on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Mike, welcome inside the playbook.
Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Good, buddy. Good. How's it going?
Good. Listen, a couple of things. I'm glad you're talking about Belichick because I've been a Pats fan for 25 years and, you know, love the Pats, hate Belichick. I think he's a despicable human being, and I think it's when he's winning Super Bowls, you know, we all love him and such, but I think it's very easy to, you know, want to trash him when the things are going a little south. I enjoy it myself. And I just wonder, I have 2 questions actually.
This,
no, do you guys get any pleasure at all out of it? Because do you feel the same way, that he is a pretty awful human?
No, I don't think he's an awful human. I think all he's doing is he is doing the job he believes he was hired to do. What I also believe is that the crafts give him plenty of rein And I think that's something that he asked the Crafts to give him. And the Crafts reciprocated. You know, he needs to do things his way. Go ahead.
He doesn't have to be such a jerk about things. I mean, you know, there's a lot of guys that do what they're supposed to do, do a good job, and they're open and honest. And, you know, I mean, this guy lies constantly, and I don't know. You know, that the main thing, John, though, without getting sidetracked, I want to say something you said yesterday about running backs and how Ben Jarvis being Ellis can't do it, can't be a full-time back because he's only 5'10 or whatever.
Yep.
John, you know, you've been around. You know, the two greatest backs in the history of the NFL, or at least two of the greatest backs, are who?
Emmitt Smith, Barry Sanders.
So now
thank
we're comparing, wait a second, we're comparing Green
five,
Ellis
eight,
to
and
Emmitt
five,
Smith?
Nine. No, but you said we need a 6-foot running back to take the pounding. This, the two of the best in the league were 5'8 and 5'9.
Guys, that's the style
not.
Of offense the Patriots want to play, though. He is not the physical specimen that ideally the Patriots want in that position. He is not. Go back and look at it on the rosters. Go back in time and look at it.
What's Fred Taylor's makeup?
Fred
he's
Taylor
about
5'11"? Is a stopgap
no,
measure.
Six, he's 6'1", 220.
Is he
and
that
he
big?
Is also yeah. He's also a stopgap, Mike. They know that right. Fred Taylor is not going to be here for maybe
well,
not
Maroney
past
was
this
a 5'11", 210, 215 guy.
And they made a mistake with him, didn't they?
5'10", 230,
right.
Something. Yeah,
and they made a mistake.
There, maybe
so you think they want a powerful bruiser? You think
yes.
That's the thing they need?
I think they do. I think they
I'm
want someone who's productive.
They want that. I'm not saying I do. I'm saying they would prefer to have that style, that physical makeup of back in their offense. They may not get it, but that's what they would prefer.
I think like a Dylan or
exactly.
Antoine Smith.
I was going to say, yeah, I think John's right in that regard. If they can find a guy like Dylan or Smith, who was a big bruiser type, who could gain, you know, 1,000 to at best 1,600 yards as Dylan did in his first year here, they would take that over a collection of running back by committee small type backs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But
I agree. But
if they can find
you,
a small back
both.
Like Green Ellis, who is capable of putting up the 1,000, 1,200, 1,300 yard seasons, I think they would take that too. I think they want the production more than they want anything else. Maybe I'm wrong, because, you know, in their linebackers, they want the 6'4", 4'6", qualifications, and you're not going to find them that often.
Let me ask you guys a simple question, both of you, please answer. Do you think 2 inches in a, you know, running back height matters worth a crap? I mean, 2 inches height, isn't it the weight, really, and how they carry the weight more important than height?
No,
to answer your question, no, 2 inches in height should not matter one stinking
right.
bit.
No, it should.
I look at a player, and I just ask myself one simple question, Mike. Can he play?
Right.
Right.
That's all I ask.
That's all I care about, too.
But I don't think the Patriots look at it like that, and I think their track record shows that.
With outside linebackers, for sure.
Yes. But I'm talking about with other players, too. And other positions. They're so fixated on 6'3", 6'4", you know, running a 4'6", 40. I mean, come on. Can a guy play or not? Where's your evaluation skills? Obviously, they stink right now because they're not doing a good enough job with it.
You know, then on the other hand, you got your Dan Copens and your, who is the Temple guy? Dan Klecko, right?
Oh, that's the Temple guy. Yeah, I thought you meant the guy on the roster now.
No, yeah, you know what?
You're right.
And to me, I'm of the opinion that they got lucky, you know. But maybe somebody, and let's keep in mind now, Copen was drafted under the Pioli regime.
Well, he's also, Copen is 6'3", you know.
He is a good-sized guy,
but
and I followed Dan
light,
throughout
he?
His career at Boston College because I was doing the BC games then,
really
and,
light, but,
you know,
yeah.
I knew he could play. And so the fact that the Patriots were able to get him as a relatively late round draft choice, what was he?
Fifth round, Eric? I think.
Fourth round?
Fifth.
Fifth,
yeah.
Fifth, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
The fact that they were able to get him there, huge bonus. It
oh,
tells
yeah.
me
good
somebody
value.
Did
that,
their homework.
That was a good value pick, no
yes,
doubt.
Yes, it was.
That was a very good value pick.
Right.
All right, guys, I appreciate your time.
All right, Mike.
Mike, thanks
right,
for the
take
call.
Take care.
All right. Appreciate it. Mike in Florida, the Ace Ticket Hotline. He got me going, didn't he?
Yeah, sure did. That's the whole point of the calls, though, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, this is all about evaluating, and people are starting to bang on the Patriots for their lack of evaluation skills, and that's fine because it's all open to criticism here. But I just, you know, I'm wondering what expectations are. That's the real question that I had today. What are expectations based on what we've seen, you know, track record-wise, Eric, over the course of the last couple of years? Why are our expectations so high? I mean, that's really, that was the bottom line question I had today. Why are our expectations high when we have seen, come on, Bill, let me finish here. Why are expectations high when we've seen lack of progress, lack of success in the draft overall? I'm not to say that everything's a complete bust, but there are a couple of years there that were not good, not good at all. And number two, over the fact that you've got a largely aging roster, and number three, you're trying to make over the defense basically in 1 year's time, why are we expecting this defense to be able to stop anybody?
Because Bill has accumulated a great deal of political capital by winning three Super Bowls and almost winning a fourth.
Okay. All I'm saying is, though, is that, you know, if that's the reason that we expect, because he's won in the past, that is not a reason that anybody should be basing success or lack thereof on. What was done in the past is done in the past. This year is this year. Last year or in 2004 or in 2001 has no bearing on what is happening in 2010. Agree or disagree?
I absolutely agree. I'm just giving you an answer to your question about why fans have such expectations.
All right. Well, that's fair. And that's what I want fans to answer. Not only, number one, why their expectations are high, but number two, the issue of players and where they're drafted and whether or not it's reasonable to think that a high draft pick should make a Pro Bowl, be a Pro Bowl caliber player. Webradio at Patriots.com is, of course, the email address. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482, just like Mike in Florida picked up on. And the Facebook page is open. If you want to chat via Facebook, you can do that. If you're not on Facebook, you can sign up. You can friend me, John Rook, and then we'll chat, and you can ask your questions on the wall, and we'll go at it that way. All right, Eric, let's sneak in a timeout here. We'll come back and think about some emails, and we'll get into some of these issues at hand, and also want to pick your brain on the Miami Dolphins coming up just here in a couple of moments as we continue Inside the Playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network. All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
Wow. You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America NA, member FDIC. Copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Welcome back inside the playbook here on a Wednesday on Patriots.com radio. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. 508-543-7482 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Web radio at Patriots.com is how you reach us via email. Facebook chat is up and running as well, so please contribute to the program. I'm really curious to find out what your expectations are, why they are, how they are, based on our previous conversations. And then just sort of as a general rule of thumb, you know, what are your expectations for newcomers onto a Patriots roster to being Pro Bowl caliber players? In other words, top 10, top 15, first round, first two rounds. Where does a guy usually have to fall in order to, that you expect him to be a Pro Bowl caliber player? Just curious as to where you're kind of coming from when you look at it, whether or not you think a guy like Jerod Mayo should be a Pro Bowl caliber player, or a guy like Darius Butler, who was a second-round draft pick, should he be a Pro Bowl caliber player? Anybody, for that matter. What are your expectations? Web radio, again, at patriots.com is the email, as Eric and I have been kind of throwing back and forth here. Let's see if we can jump into a couple of these real quickie.
All right.
This one comes from William. Just says, John and Eric, I'm asking you to answer for an idiot caller, but Bill lied, caller that we had in the last couple of minutes. When, seriously, when has he ever said anything to us about anything? If he lied to a player in a private conversation, who knows? He won't say, and I'm not going to go off on one side. So I guess the emailer is questioning whether or not Bill actually lies or doesn't lie, and whether or not, you know, it's in really any of our business.
I think I knew what he was referring to in that case. Was it Mike from Florida that called?
Yes.
I think I know the particular one he was talking about, because we argued about it on PFW in Progress earlier this year before the season started. It had to do with Charlie Casserly's report last year about Brady. At the Miami game, in Miami, mm-hmm. last year, had the rib injury and the finger at the same time on his throwing hand. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe that week, that the report came out, Bill was asked, is there anything to the report? Charlie Casserly said he has three broken ribs or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Bill said something to the effect of, no, that's absolutely false. Who's wrong more than Charlie Casserly? Something, words to that effect,
right.
I'm paraphrasing a little bit.
That. I remember
and
that.
It turned out that Brady had broken ribs and a broken, messed up finger. I'm not sure if it was broken or not, but he had a problem with his finger. So.
But he did have broken ribs. We found out about that after the fact in the offseason.
Exactly. So I think in Mike from Florida's defense, I think that might have been what he was referring to. I don't know if he meant that Bill lies all the time, but I think he was talking about that specific case. I probably shouldn't speak for Mike in Florida for what he was thinking, but that was the first thing that entered my mind when he said that.
Well, and, frankly, I think, I'm banging on Coach Belichick, and in a sense, I guess I'm coming to his defense with this particular statement, but, perhaps at the time that the story came out, that it wasn't definitive that Brady had broken ribs. We don't know, and here's the problem. We're never going to know.
Right.
We're never going to know because this team has a rule how they treat injuries. They treat injuries like, you know, lepers used to get treated. They get shunned, and we don't, you know, basically talk about them, and we just kind of stick them in a dark corner and leave them there, and we don't talk about them. That's it. And so we don't really know if a coach is lying or if he's just bending the truth or if he's protecting the player or he's protecting his own interests. We don't know the answer to that.
Right.
All I can tell you is based on what we've seen, some teams are a little bit more forthcoming in what they have to say about injuries than the Patriots are. Granted, you know, there are HIPAA laws out there that the NFL adheres to that protect largely individual cases from being discussed, you know, in depth. But teams seem to be offering a little bit more comment on whether or not a guy could go or can't or might not be able to go than the Patriots do. And I realize that, you know, a lot of times people asking these questions are bookies or people that have, might have a vested interest in the outcome of a game and whether or not a guy's able to go. And, you know, I understand all that.
Most people who ask are just either reporters or regular fans who just want to know.
Who just want to know.
You saw a guy in the game. You saw him get hurt. Clearly, he was in agony or in pain or needed help getting off the field. You want to know what the status is.
Absolutely.
It's human
and,
nature.
And again, here's the other thing. I mean, let's bring it into present day. You mentioned earlier in the program that Fred Taylor was not on the field for the media portion of practice today.
Right.
Okay. So now, obviously, that begs the question, well, okay, what's wrong with Fred? Might we see him tomorrow? Might he be available to play in what is undoubtedly a very important early season game this next Monday night against Miami? And yet the answer to that will be, we'll have an injury report for you, you know, after 4 o'clock today. And of course the injury report's going to say, you know, questionable or, you know, whatever it will say. And of course we're not getting answers to what it is that we're asking. And so then that leads, when you're not honest with people and when you're not facing up to people and you're not answering the questions that are asked, it leads to more and more miscommunication. It's a downward spiral that is very, very hard to pull out of. That is PR 101, and nobody knows that better than the Patriots. But the Patriots do the best job that they can to manage the public relations machine to the best of their ability. And what the Patriots say, according to the Patriots, should be the fact, not what we say or not what, you know, media says or not what the players say. The Patriots want to manage that. I don't argue the fact that the Patriots like to manage their media opportunities.
They're within their rights to do that.
They most definitely are. But what I'm saying is you've got to find a way to reach a happy medium, if at all possible, and have somebody who's willing to give a little bit more detail so misconceptions do not occur.
That's a good point. Very good point.
And that's where I think the Patriots drop the ball.
Yeah. If you have, investigative reports that turn out to be erroneous or partially factual, then misinformation gets out there in the public sphere, and then it takes hold, and then you've created a bigger mess for yourself than if you had just come out and given the facts right off the bat.
That is correct.
Very great point.
That is correct. And so the Patriots are well within their rights to do what they do, but they could really turn this negative into a positive by making one or two small changes and by getting Bill to go along with these one or two small changes. And I don't think players would have a problem with it because you're not giving away any, you know, state secrets. You're not violating any HIPAA laws.
Right.
You know, you'd make so many people so much happier, except the fact that it's got to be, well, my way or the highway, according to Bill Belichick. And I think that also may have something to do with what Mike in Florida was saying earlier.
Yeah, could be.
Just again, my own personal interpretation of it all. It really is not a hard problem to fix. I've done this countless times for political candidates and for, you know, college players who get themselves into media binds and things like that. You know, you try to help people out based on, you know, hey, I've got 31 years experience in doing stuff like this. And so you do this to the best of your ability. You sort of analyze the situation. You figure out what it's going to take to make everybody happy. And when you can't make everybody happy, which you certainly find out that is to be the case, then you figure out, number one, what's going to make you happiest. Okay?
Right.
And if you make you happy, chances are, more often than not all the time, but more often than not, you're going to make everybody else happy too. One simple thing, make myself happy.
Just be honest. Tell the truth.
There you go. The honesty is the only policy as far as I'm concerned.
I'm with you.
Adam in Orlando writes, John, I was thinking about the season so far and the first and versus second half performances. We have led at the end of the first half in every game, but this past week's game against Buffalo was the first game in which we've actually outscored the opponent in the second half, 21-14. Even though it was Buffalo and we gave up 30, I will take it as a positive sign. With caution, but one to build on no less, and most importantly, we got the W. And I agree with Eric, give Green Ellis a chance and see what he does. I was happy with the way he ran last week. He can't be any worse than what we got from Maroney. Well, Adam, I would certainly say you're absolutely right about that. Okay, number one, that is true. Number two, let's also consider it was Buffalo. And what you get against Buffalo is going to be, should be, way different than what you see going to see available against Miami. Am I right about that, Eric?
Oh, yeah. I would think so.
You know, I mean,
I expect a lot more from Miami's defense than I did from the Bills.
You know, Mike Nolan, you know, is back in as a defensive coordinator now, which is probably where the guy deserves to be. Mm. I mean, he wasn't great as a head coach in San Francisco, but then again, I'm not so sure he was fighting with a full deck. Be that as it may, the man is probably back in a position in which he can succeed. Some guys are just coordinators.
Yep.
And some guys really aren't head coaches where they have to manage a little bit of everything.
Right. Some guys are better college head coaches as opposed to NFL head coaches.
Right.
You're right. There are certain niches that coaches have or trends that seem to follow them through their careers. That
Absolutely. And Mike Nolan came in for Paul Pasqualani in the offseason. And was basically instructed to, you know, hey, let's put your defense together. You know, San Francisco's defense is the couple of years you there was certainly statistically better than the one that the 49ers, I think, are throwing out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
The Dolphins are statistically better right now than they were the last couple of years as well defensively if you look at the numbers and try to compare them to, you know, 09 and 08. So the Dolphins are moving in the right direction. Even though they gave up on a couple of players that they deemed expendable, they're still moving in the right direction with the personnel that they have and with the schemes that they have. I got to tell you, you know, that's where I think this game on Monday night is going to be won or lost. Frankly, it's not so much the fact, you know, hey, can the Patriots' defense slow the Dolphins' offense down? The answer to that is no, I don't think they can, and I think the Dolphins will probably score four touchdowns. They might get a couple of field goals on top of that, but I'm looking at four primarily as the number that I personally expect the Patriots' defense to allow. The question then is going to be, for the Patriots to win this game, can they score more than four against a Miami defense? And right now, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's going to I'm kind of in agreement with you on that, John. I think 3 to 4
maybe
at best, or 3 in a field goal, you know, mid 20s I think might be the ceiling against this Miami defense.
But I think that the Miami offense, though, and granted, the first 2 weeks Miami offense sputtered. They really didn't do that great a job.
No, but I have nightmares of last year with Chad Henne and all day to throw and leading a come from behind win in Miami. I mean, he looked like, I've said it a million times.
He looked like Dan Marino.
He did. That's what I was going to say. He looked like Dan Marino with all that time to throw, and I don't see right now anybody who's going to be pressuring him. And
who? Where's
the pressure?
That's
what I'm saying. I don't see
it.
That's what I said. I don't see anybody who's going to be able to do that. So I have nightmarish visions of history repeating itself.
Right now, I hope that I change my mind in the next couple of days. But right now, I have zero expectations for Monday. That being said, you know, trying to look at you know where the Patriots might actually have some success and what it will take for them, you know, to have some of that success. You know, controlling the clock is certainly going to be a key. You know, Green Ellis is going to have his opportunity, I would assume, especially in light of the fact that, you know, Taylor may or may not be able to go next Monday night. Obviously, if he doesn't go, then it's going to be a, you know, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis / Sammy Morris kind of night. And that's all you're going to have really to hang your hat on.
By the way,
Danny Woodhead, too, you know. So,
right. The only other thing I wanted to add about Taylor is that you should keep in mind, obviously, it's still early in the week, but there's an extra day of practice this week.
True.
Because of the Monday night game. So
true.
It's possible that today, as a precaution, in Taylor's case, they're treating it like a Tuesday.
Okay.
So I just want to throw that out there. I don't know that to be true. I'm just saying because there's a four-day practice week instead of a three, potentially maybe that is a factor in why we didn't see him today.
Well, that's probably certainly worth noting. Will the injury report still come out in another hour or so?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This is an extra day at the end of the week
right.
That they're getting because it's a Monday night game. But,
right.
Yeah, there should still be an injury report, and he will most likely be on there with some sort of designation as to what he took part in today, if anything.
Okay. Let me share one more email here, at the very least, before we let you get out of here. Our friend John in South Carolina writes, John and Eric, a horrible person? No, Bill Belichick is not a horrible person. The caller enjoys bashing Bill because the guy is bad to the press? Hell, that makes me like him even more. Anyone who reduces Eric to tears is okay in my book. Just kidding, Eric. Let's be honest. Much of the press will throw him and anyone else under the bus in a heartbeat. Hell, Felger will do it even if he has to make it up. No one is outraged with him. I don't necessarily agree with that, but okay. So our offense is good, and it is looking like the picks the Patriots made are pretty freaking good. The defense should get better. Let's put it in perspective. The only starter on our defense with more than 3 years of Patriots experience is who? Wilfork and Sanders? These guys have to grow and learn together. We act like every pick made in the first round should be in the Pro Bowl, and it is silly. When you draft outside the top 10 players, it is a crapshoot, and we don't get a lot of top 10 drafts. Any comments one way or the other?
Yeah, Mike, I have a comment specifically about his comment on the defense should get better, that statement, that declarative statement. Why? Why should the defense get better?
Yeah, well, we don't really have anything to hang our hats on.
We'd like it to, yeah.
Everybody wants it to get better.
Right.
Don't get us wrong here.
But
just don't see any signs for it to get better.
Exactly. I've seen no evidence that it is going to anytime soon.
I mean, is it going to get better? Why? Because they're going to practice more?
Yeah, because they'll play more, because they'll have more experience.
I mean, I will allow this. I think the one way, and again, what do I know? I've only been around the game for 30-some-odd years. I didn't play it at the professional level, but, you know, I've talked to enough coaches, been around it long enough to at least have, a pretty good grasp of working knowledge here. And all I can tell you is that the only way that I can see the defense getting appreciably better than what we see on the field right now, Eric Scalavino, is a simple simplicity. I don't want to use the word dumbing down because I think that's sort of a misnomer. But if you keep things simple and if you make things simpler for the younger guys on the field, I think that will encourage them. They won't be bogged down with near as much gobbledygook in their head, and they can just lean back and they can play. And hopefully we'll see some of the athletic ability that we all hope that they have, that we all hope that the Patriots also saw when they were evaluating these guys, you know, over the last couple of years. I'm a proponent of when things are not going well and you have a unit that is largely young, tearing it down, giving them the basics and telling them to go play and putting the guys out there that you really feel like have the best chance athletically to have you succeed. Obviously, if that means putting Butler out there, if that's all you got, then you put him out there. But he was so horrific a couple of weeks ago, it doesn't surprise me that they made a move with someone like Kyle Arrington. You know, Terrence Wheatley undoubtedly is going to get, you know, his time at the corner as well once he's completely healthy and ready to go. But that's one of the reasons why Devin McCourty, okay? He was your number one draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
He's a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
He's the only player on the defensive roster that has appeared in every play from scrimmage this season through three games. He's the only one.
Hmm.
So they obviously are putting him out there and doing exactly what I just said with a guy like Devin McCourty.
Yeah.
I'm thinking you got to do that with some of the other guys too. And then and simplify it for them. Give them fewer reads. Give them less things to think about. Put yourself in a basic defense and, you know, and then just say, all right, come after us and let's see if we can make some plays. I don't know any other way to do it, but I only see that as the way that what you're doing is you're gonna tear it down to where you're gonna create a floor. And then, based on the fact that you don't have stuff that you have to remember and keys that you have to remember, it stands to reason that you can appreciably see some improvement as long as you don't keep piling on responsibility to the younger guys. Does that make any sense at all?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
All right. What do you think? Am I way off base with that?
No, I don't think so. I don't know.
You would tell me. You would tell me.
Of course I would tell. Of course I would. I'm never afraid to tell you what I think, John. You know that. We've known each other too long.
This is true.
But I just don't know. I just don't know if we will see it. I think that's a good idea, but I'm just not convinced that we will see that.
That's
because a lot of the same problems we're having this year were problems that we had last year, and they could have fixed those by now.
Yeah, and they haven't.
And they haven't. So.
And what we perceive as problems, either A, they don't perceive as a problem at all, or B, they're just overlooking.
Mm.
And if they're overlooking, then that really scares me.
Either way, it's a problem.
It's still a problem.
Adding to the problem, yeah.
It's still a problem.
Right.
I mean, you know, you don't have anybody that can rush the passer.
Yep.
Nobody that can rush the passer. How does that happen? How do they not recognize that? And for them to say, well, you know, we like the guys we have, mule muffins.
What's that?
That means, you know, horse bleep.
Oh. Okay.
Don't you know that was Sherman Potter's favorite saying in the TV series MASH? Mule muffins.
I never, but see, I was so young when that was on, I didn't really understand. What was...
Okay, touche.
Yeah, even I watched that show.
Come on!
I said I watched it. I was young.
You watch it on the Hallmark Channel, don't you, for God's sake?
So on that insult, I think I will leave you, John.
Okay, thanks a lot. I'll see you tomorrow then, correct?
Yes, you're going to be up in the
I'll be back
stadium?
In the studio tomorrow. Yeah, I'll be there tomorrow.
All right.
Good stuff.
We'll make our picks and score predictions tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Thanks, E.
All right, man.
All right. Eric Scalavino, staff writer for Patriots Football Weekly, joining us in the opening hour of the program on Wednesdays, as he normally does. We'll take a break here, but stick around. We're going to get to some more emails, webradio@patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482. Facebook chat is up and running as well. Going to get to some more of your emails on your expectations, why they might have been elevated, especially on the defensive side of the ball, what you also think justifies a reasonable expectation for a Pro Bowl caliber player. Top 10 guy, top 20 guy, first round guy, first two round guy. What are you thinking? Since we kind of got into some of that conversation today, I'd like to know what your expectations are for the Patriots picking Pro Bowl caliber players. And then in hour number two, we get more into the Miami Dolphins with you, of course, right here in the Playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network. All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
Wow. You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America and a member FDIC. Copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? Jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Our number two inside Patriots playbook here for a Wednesday, coming to you from the confines of the Fortress of Solitude, otherwise known as my basement studio, my home in East Providence, Rhode Island. What did you call it, Kevin? My man cave? Yeah. I wish it were as glorious as it sounds. It really isn't. I do have my satellite TV down here, and you know, I've got an old, you know, VCR. Believe it or not, there's no, you know, I have DVR capability down here, but you know, I still have a VCR. I like running old videotapes in, and I do watch, you know, the satellite, and you know, I've got the internet down here, a little Wi-Fi action. You know, they've got my studio line in here, and it's okay. It's not bad, but you know, it's just nothing glamorous. I mean, I've got, you know, posters basically on the walls down here. There's no glamorous furniture or anything else, but hey, it is what it is. You know, it's a nice little fortress where I can go, and this is where my wife usually banishes me, you know, on game days, you know, when especially when the Longhorns are playing. She hasn't done that yet for the Patriots. Maybe it's because I tend to look at the Patriots a little bit more analytically, you know, when the Patriots are playing, and I don't quite get as upset sometimes as I do as when the Longhorns are playing and they, when they're basically having no success like they did this last weekend. And so I get banished to the basement where, you know, my yelling and screaming will sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes fall on deaf ears. So anyway, that's where I'm coming from today. Coming up, Andy Kent, who covers the Miami Dolphins for Dolphins.com. He will join us here in approximately 20 minutes or so, and then we'll talk with him about the Dolphins and get ready to start looking at that matchup that will get played this next Monday night. You know, something that Eric Scalavino mentioned that, you know, certainly I guess is worth repeating here. We keep building up, and this is Wednesday, and it's game week, and you know, and a lot of people are already starting to look forward to this matchup because it's an important matchup, and I'll explain a little bit more on that in a moment. But the fact is that there is an extra day of practice here. So really, this is Tuesday, even though the players are out there practicing. This is still Tuesday in terms of the work week because they've got an extra day of practice. So do the Dolphins, for that matter. So you have to pace yourself a little bit differently in this longer work week. The Patriots are very fortunate, I would add this week, in having their off week come following a Monday night football game. Patriots ended up getting dealt, I think it was, if you look at the overall wins and losses of last year's teams, I think the Patriots' record or the Patriots' schedule is called the sixth hardest in the NFL based on opponents' one-loss records from 2009. You know, the more that you look at it, you know, and you look at this upcoming three-game stretch, really four if you count this road game at Miami with the off week, of course, in between. But this is really as tough a stretch of three or four games as I can remember in a while. And maybe my memory bank is somewhat short because we do live kind of from game to game, week to week. Certainly we don't live more than season to season. Sometimes you really have to do some research and some work to go back in the memory banks and to remember some of the particulars from even a year ago, much less 2 years or 5 years ago or 6 years ago, which was the Patriots' last Super Bowl season. That takes a little time, takes a little thought, takes a little digging even to figure out, you know, well, that was a tough stretch back in 97 when the Patriots were, you know, well, yeah, I'm sure it was, but, you know, sometimes you don't necessarily have the benefit of hindsight to you know, or the timing of that hindsight to go back and do that research. Doesn't mean you can't do it. One of the things that I'll get into with Andy Kent in a little bit is, you know, how the Dolphins are, you know, kind of pacing themselves this week. Number one, and number two, do they look at this as an even more important week than, say, the Patriots? And here's why I look at it. This is something else that Peter King brought to light in SI, if you get a chance to read it this week, and it makes perfect sense to me. By the way, in the magazine this week, he always picks a game of the week in the NFL, and he has the Pats at the Dolphins as his pick of the week. Now, game of the week, sure. Pick of the week, I think this is what he feels like is, you know, one of his best bets. And I put quotations around the word bets because he's not a gambling man per se. He's not advocating that you go out and you bet this way or wager this way, but I think he feels pretty solid based on his information making this particular selection. And Peter King this week says I'll just read it. He says, the early season round robin among the power players in the AFC East wraps up Monday night in front of the South Beach Glitterati. The Jets, Patriots, and Dolphins are all 2-1, but the Jets have a 2-0 edge in common games, having beaten both New England and Miami. So Monday's game could have major tiebreaker implications. Because New England's defense has been so generous, allowing 27.3 points per game, and a dreadful 69.4% completion rate. Again, let me reiterate that, and this is my words now. Patriots defense has allowed opposing quarterbacks to complete almost 70% of their passes. Mm-hmm. Okay, just let that sink in for a moment. 70%. Peter King says the Patriots might need the game to be a shootout for them to have a chance to win. You think? The key player, ironically, could be New England running back Danny Woodhead, cut by the Jets in September and now in place to take up the slack after the injury to Kevin Faulk, the team's ace third down back. But Peter says Dolphins 30, Pats 23. I can't argue with his reasoning. I think it's pretty sound thinking, although I think he just put the Woodhead thing in there sort of an afterthought. I don't really see Danny Woodhead. I mean, could he? Yeah. Especially if Fred Taylor does not play. And we won't know that more definitively until this week continues to progress. But yeah, he could if it's Benjarvis Green-Ellis and Sammy Morris and Danny Woodhead, and that's what you have as a stable of running backs. Doesn't, and probably shouldn't, scare anyone, does it? No. But the point here is that, again, because the Jets have already beaten the Patriots and the Dolphins. The Patriots are 0-1 against common opponents. The Dolphins are also 0-1 against common opponents. So even though technically whoever wins this game will only be a game out of first place, right? Because the Jets won, they'd be 3-1. Whoever wins this game will also be 3-1. Whoever loses is going to be 2-2. Technically, you'll only be a game out of first place. But whoever loses this game is really going to be more like 2 back because you're 0-2 in the division, and you will have lost to both of the teams that are ahead of you. So it's more like being 2 behind, and really 3 behind, because when it comes to tiebreakers, what's the first tiebreaker, folks? Yeah, let's all say it together, head-to-head. And so you're 2 games back, based on your 0-2 in the division, and yet if you get even with them, you're still behind them because you lost head-to-head to both of those teams in front of you. So it's really more like being 3 back. Now, this is week 4, okay? But we said this before the first game of the year against Cincinnati, how really, for the first time in a long time, you know, the thought was that this was as important a season opener for the Patriots as they've had in some time. Because the way that the schedule stacks up against them early and does not do them any favors. And this week at Miami, the schedule gets magnified. The schedule difficulty gets magnified even more. And it supports what we were talking about in week one against Cincinnati. Fact remains that whoever loses, New England or Miami, is 0-2 in the division and in effect 2 or 3 games out of the division lead. And you got two teams with better records ahead of you. Yes, it's week 4. Yes, there are still going to be 12 weeks of football to play. That's a lot of football. But I would tell you that I believe that it sets a tone and a trend that will be difficult to overcome. That if you're able to overcome it, it will take every single one of those 12 weeks. Because you don't control. You no longer have things in your control. If you're the loser in this particular outcome on Monday night, you can't control anything but what you do. Can you get even with the Jets and Dolphins? Yes, that's the one saving grace. And really, that's why you say, well, it's not the end of the season. Because, well, all you got to do is take care of business and you beat the Jets and you beat the Dolphins next time around. Both of the games happen to be at home, by the way, for the Patriots, and therefore you have at least a solid opportunity to square your record and even it out. So as long as you take care of business and you're the games, you're the weeks, you can pull up even with them and eventually surpass them. As long as you take care of business. But you can't afford to stumble to either one of those guys in the division any longer. And you can't afford to stumble to Buffalo, even though, you know, eventually we know that's going to happen. The Patriots have won 14 straight now against the Bills. And again, you know, it's just borrowed time. It's borrowed time. They will eventually lose to the Bills. It's inevitable. I don't know if it'll happen this year. It might. It might. So anyway, I just wanted to kind of put that in there as food for thought, simply because, you know, you can never underscore the importance of a game. Yes, it's still early in the season, but when you look at being 0-2 against the two teams ahead of you in the standings, that just tells me that there is a lot of work to do. A lot of work to do, and maybe too much work to do for a roster that is built the way that the Patriots roster is built. There's youth on the defensive side of the ball. There's really not a whole lot of appreciable evidence to this point in time that things are going to get a heck of a lot better on that side of the ball. We've already discussed that today. That'll be a topic of conversation probably for the rest of this season. That's going to continue. I'm wondering how much the answers are going to change from week to week. If they change at all, how much are they going to change? Steven sent me this note via Facebook. He says, the Patriots are only going to get better if the coaching staff steps up. Repetitions and putting the players in a position to succeed. That's how things are going to get better appreciably on the defensive side of the ball.
And bam, I got it.
Okay, well, hopefully somebody will get it because that's what it's going to take to get it.
No, I can't wait.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you can, but that's, you know, it is what it is, right, Bill? So
it is what it is.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. All right, let's see if we can squeeze in a couple more emails here. Don't forget, webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 on the phone. Facebook chat open as well. Wall page is open. If you want to comment on the game and the topics of conversation that we've had today, please feel free to fire away. And we'll get into Andy Kent from Dolphins.com coming up here shortly. In the meantime, Eric in Tuscaloosa says, I'm a longtime fan. I've been listening to you guys for about 4 years. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate the loyalty. He says, after observing the games this year, one thing sticks out on the defense as a glaring need. That is that the defense does not play with much tenacity. I don't want dirty players, but I feel as though they need the type of players that will instill much-needed toughness into our players. Okay. Every one of them looks soft out there. I do think that with a tough guy inserted into a couple of positions, that the overall composition of the defense could get better. Call me crazy, but a guy like Ray Lewis could really change our defensive philosophy and possibly demand that the defense be given the opportunities to make more plays via freedom to roam, blitz, etc. What do you guys think? And I don't think that's as off the wall as some might think, Eric. I was a proponent a year ago of going out and getting a guy like Julius Peppers. I was a proponent this year in the offseason of going out and getting a guy like Julius Peppers. The problem with that is that a guy like Julius Peppers is going to cost you money that the Patriots were not willing to spend. I'm sure that there were some other issues involved, but I think that seemed to me to be kind of, you know, cutting to the chase. Bottom line, money, hefty contract, don't know that we want to pick that up with an impending lockout looming. But Peppers could have been that kind of guy they're looking for, a guy that kind of personifies toughness, a guy that certainly has a reputation for putting pressure on the quarterback. He's still, to my estimation, still one of the preeminent defensive tackles in the entire NFL. Guy with Pro Bowl pedigree, right? So we've been talking about that. I mean, yeah, high draft pick, Pro Bowl pedigree. I think it would help. Let's just go back to, you know, a couple of years ago when Teddy Bruschi was still almost in every down part of this team defensively. Mike Vrabel was a part of this team every down defensively, just about. And, you know, you had those two guys sitting back there defensively who, you know, if not for their actions, were, you know, leading the way with their words, with their vocalness, with you know, they were leading the way and other guys were following. And they didn't mind doing that. And I don't think this team right now, especially on that side of the football, has guys that are willing to do that like what Teddy and Mike Vrabel and even Richard Seymour did. And I think in their effort to overturn some of the age issues, and yes, they had age issues. I'm not going to argue that point. That is correct. This defense was getting old and older by the minute. But as they're turning it over, they're also turning over veteran presence, veteran leadership, veteran tenacity, as you put it, Eric. They're turning over guys who know how to step up and lead by example, by their actions on the field, by their words. Guys that can fire up, you know, guys in the huddle and you know, wear their you know, emotions on their shirt sleeves. So that's unfortunately the downside to the turning over of the roster. Unless you specifically go out and find guys that maybe can kind of fill that bill. And again, I think that's a part of the evaluation process where this team has really kind of missed out on. I think you need to go out and find some of these fire and brimstone guys. Like Teddy Bruschi. I mean, they did a good job of that when they picked Bruschi up. Bruschi was a find. He ends up being a Pro Bowl caliber player. Turned out a tremendous NFL career. He had a plus career. There's no doubt about it from where the Patriots selected him. Remember, he was a down lineman in college, and they turned him into an inside linebacker. They need to go out and find these guys that want to lead. Let me read you again one item from the story about Scott Pioli in Sports Illustrated this week. Okay, that Peter King wrote. Pioli placed an emphasis on character this year. His top five picks were captains on their college teams. Think about that. Iowa coach Kurt Ferentz told Pioli that tight end Tony Moaki was one of the three most important players in his program in the coach's 11-year tenure at the school. And even though he averaged only 15 catches a year at Iowa, Pioli took him in the third round. Now Moyaki is a starter. He's been thrown to more times and has more catches than any other receiver on the team. But the point is that he placed an emphasis on team captains, on leaders, on guys who lead not only by example and their playing, but also their verbosity, for lack of a better phrase. Maybe tenacity is the word that we are looking for here. That's not what the Patriots are doing. They're not doing that. I don't see them doing that. Do you? I don't think that's part of the problem. So to answer your question, Eric, in Tuscaloosa, yeah, I think that could help this defense get better. It certainly can't hurt. Because what you got right now, we're going to have to live with. Maybe they thought that Vince Wilfork would be that kind of a player. And see, he's never been that kind of player. And if they thought he could be that kind of player, then again, here's another issue, and here's another example of sort of miscasting someone. Brandon Merriweather? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not sold that the Patriots are totally still in love with Brandon Merriweather. Not sold on it. But, you know, I guess time will ultimately tell about that. Let's get another one here. This one comes from Brian. Yes, I think Brian. Yes, Brian in New Mexico. Thanks, Brian, for the email. Here we go. If you look at the All-Pro team, it's full of top three picks as well as a few guys like Welker who come out of nowhere. But if you look at the teams that go deep into the playoffs, there are very few high draft picks on those teams. Who cares how many All-Pros the Patriots have? Let's get good players who fit the system and contend. Let the Browns have Joe Thomas. Top picks might be worth it in the long run, but they usually take 5 or 6 years to reach an All-Pro level and gobble up your salary cap in the process. More likely, they'll bust while dragging away any cash you would have had to sign veterans. One look at the Lions' past decade is evidence enough of that. Okay, that's a fair point. Mayo locks up the linebacker spot for a decade and was a 100-tackle linebacker out of the gate. Teams would pay top dollar for a veteran with his production, so I'm perfectly happy with the Pats paying him that top 10 salary. For perspective on top picks outside of the Patriots bubble, let's take a minute and scan the Super Bowl champ roster. There's no high draft picks other than Reggie Bush and Cedric Ellis, both of whom are far from All-Pro level. Jonathan Vilma, as the 12th pick and 2004 Defensive Rookie of the Year, seems pretty comparable to me to Mayo. If that caliber of high caliber players works for contenders like the Saints and Patriots, I'd rather have that player and compete for rings rather than Patrick Willis and miss the playoffs. Again, good points. He says, don't you expect to read on air, well, here's the Saints starters in the draft positions. Okay, almost all these guys are mid to low picks. Drew Brees, yeah. Pierre Thomas, undrafted. You mentioned Heath Evans, Marcus Colston. Yeah, very low draft pick. Colston, number 252. Did you remember that? Carl Nix, 164. Jonathan Goodwin, 154. Scott Shanley, 251. Yeah, a lot of them. Jolon Dunbar was undrafted. He's a free agent. He says, at the end of the day, this debate was settled a decade ago for me. Forget Drew Bledsoe. Give me Tom Brady. All right, Brian in New Mexico. Very good email. Good examples there. Again, that's all got to get back, though, to the original issue of player evaluation. And obviously, when you're selecting at no better than, say, 20-ish in the draft, if you're making the playoffs, you're not going to do much better than that, certainly in the draft selection process, or 21st, actually, I guess, then it stands to reason that you really should do your homework, because you're not going to get that sure-fired super rookie. That's why I think that, putting a Pro Bowl moniker on a guy who is automatically drafted in the top 10 is unfair to the team and unfair to the player. Yeah, I think we have a reasonable expectation that the guy will go on and have a good, solid pro career. But again, I think most fans look at it kind of like Brian in New Mexico does here, is that, forget the Pro Bowl, forget, all that stuff. All I want are guys who go out and get me wins. And the Patriots in the past have done that. The problem is that the Patriots of more recent vintage have not done that. And now, with two number one draft picks coming up this next April, and one of them possibly a good high pick, again, another potential top 10 pick like you had with Mayo a couple of years ago, then there's a chance to appreciably get better in a hurry depending on what you deem as your most important need. Hello, Mark Ingram. So, I just, it's still a crapshoot. You still have to do your job in evaluation, and while the Patriots have stumbled on a few of those, and more than maybe even their fair share over the last few years in some of the mid to lower round draft evaluations, every once in a while, one still gets through. You know, Dan Copeland happens. Tom Brady happens. But it seems like those are happening less and less. And so now that you've got an opportunity with higher draft picks, you want to make sure you don't screw it up. And to me, you're right. I tend to agree with this. You don't necessarily need a Pro Bowl caliber player even with a top 10 pick. I want someone who's solid, and I want someone who is going to get me wins. Who can win? That's what I want to see. And that's what the Chiefs had subscribing to. This is what Scott Pioli subscribed to when he was running personnel issues for the Patriots. I look at character issues. I look at guys that lead their college teams, that are leaders by example, that are leaders with their words, that are leaders in the locker room, that are leaders in the huddle. And I think the Patriots are getting away from that. And I think that is a contributing factor to what we're seeing out on the field right now, present day. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's our number. Facebook chat open as well. Let's get a final break in here. Hopefully we'll get Andy coming up here in just a couple of moments from Dolphins.com. Got some more emails to get to as we continue right here inside Patriots Playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
Wow. You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots Banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots Banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
You got?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America and a member FDIC. Copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in? It
says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? Jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Inside Patriots playbook for a Wednesday. Still waiting on Andy Kent, who covers the Dolphins for Dolphins.com. Should tell you that he said he would join us as soon as he is done with Dolphins head coach Tony Sparano. So that's really kind of what we're waiting on, and hopefully we'll get him before the top of the hour, and we hand it off to our Shop Talk guys. If not, then what we'll do is we'll see if we can't reschedule him for tomorrow. Tomorrow's show, by the way, stacks to be a great one. It'll be a heavy ESPN influence tomorrow, because not only do we have Russell Baxter, who joins us every Thursday to talk about other games from around the league, but the one and only professor, good friend of mine, John Clayton, will join us on Thursday's show, Inside Patriots Playbook, tomorrow. So we'll have both John Clayton and Russell Baxter from the worldwide leader tomorrow's playbook to discuss Pats, Dolphins, and other things through the NFL. And so if you have questions for either one of those gentlemen, you can certainly email them in early. Best bet is to send them to me via Facebook. We'll take care of it. So we'll get them read. Steven just sent this note via Facebook. He said, John, there's nothing I can really point to, but I will disagree with you and Peter King. I think the score on Monday will be 31 for the Patriots, 20 for Miami. Why? Because I think the DBs, except Merriweather, will be better. I also think there will be more complexity from the front seven. And on offense, the Kevin Falk silver lining that others have to step up now. And I think they will. The tight end, Edelman, Woodhead, the defense of Miami just cannot blanket Falk on third down now. Or maybe those replacing Falk. Okay, thanks, Stephen. Appreciate that. Let's take this opportunity then to listen in to Dolphins head coach Tony Sparano, who joined members of the Patriots media from Gillette Stadium just a short while ago. And, you know, first of all, it is Wednesday. There's an extra day of workouts here until you get to Monday's game, but that doesn't mean that these two teams are not sort of already kind of beginning the game plan work, even though they've got an extra day to practice here. That stuff has already started. And find out whether or not he shares the opinion that, you know, hey, for an early season game, this has got some importance to it, especially within the AFC East. And here is the Patriots media with Tony Sparano.
How you doing?
Doing well. Start off with, what have you seen from the Patriots on film this week?
I've seen obviously a very good team, a very well coached team. You know, look like that, they're scoring a bunch of points. On offense, they're getting a lot of weapons involved, you know, with the tight ends and of course, you know, Randy West. I think their offensive line is starting to play a lot better right now. It looks like those guys are playing well. And doing a good job of protecting Tom. Of course, you know, Tom has been outstanding. I mean, the guy's completing almost 70% of his passes. I think on defense, you know, when I watch him, I'm seeing these guys fly around. I really like the two inside linebackers. Mayo's a guy I've always had a lot of respect for. And Spikes is a guy we really like in the draft. And, you know, I think that the front is a pretty stout group, you know, with Vince out there and that group. So it's a physical football team, and they look like they're playing pretty well.
Now, Tony, Queen Ellis had a big game for them last week, and they used him particularly late in the game when they wanted to close it down. What have you noticed about him on the film, and what kind of dimension does he bring to them maybe that they didn't have before when they weren't using him that much?
Well, it looks to me like he's just a guy that, you know, from the first of all, a physical runner. Can get downhill at you, but did circle the defense once or twice in some of those situations as well. But it seems like a physical runner that gets downhill, hard to tackle, and, you know, I mean, to finish a game, those type of things, when you're trying to get those kind of drives, to win the football game, I think looks like he's the kind of guy that can do that for you.
Do you think, they use a number of running backs in various situations. Does this make them a little more challenging to prepare for than maybe a team that uses one feature back a lot?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because, you know, I think when you're trying to, you know, to prepare for, or when you are preparing for really just one back, one feature back, I think that you can kind of gear some of the things you're doing around that. We just had that same situation with the Jets last week in that, you know, they had two backs and both of them play, you know, a good amount during the game, and they come at you a little differently. You know, one's a strong guy, one can, you know, in LaDainian can do some different things. So I think when you're trying to prepare that way, it makes it a little more difficult. You know, I mean, I've coached Fred Taylor before when I was in Jacksonville. I know the type of player he is, and, you know, I mean, now – Green Ellis involvement, some of these guys, it makes it a little bit harder.
Dustin Keller had a good performance against you guys on Sunday night, and the Patriots obviously have two very talented rookies, plus Algie Crumpler at that position. How difficult is it to defend those tight ends?
Well, it's difficult. I mean, no question about it. And I think that, you know, you can try a lot of ways, but, you know, with the Patriots, you got to kind of pick your poison a little bit there, you know, because you can go out there and maybe try to double one of those guys, but then you could expose yourself with Randy or with Wes or with any of those people. So, you know, you got to be a little bit careful. I mean, we got to do a little bit better job. I think we did a better job in the second half of the game. You know, Dustin had a good first half and made some catches, caught a couple of balls in some hot situations, which, you know, what I mean by that is just, you know, we blitzed him and he's the hot receiver and they threw the ball there. But, you know, he also made a couple of really good catches in the game. I thought in the second half we played a lot better.
Are there similarities to Hernandez and Keller?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, you know, Hernandez, you see his average per catch, and, you know, I mean, of course, this guy, you know, being out here in Florida, I mean, we know an awful lot about him. So, you know, he's a guy that you can mistake for a tight end, I think, at times. In other words, you need to treat him a little bit more like a receiver because he has the ability to run by you and make yards after the catch, and that's evident right now with his average per catch. So, you know, you got to be, you know, really got to be cognizant of that. And that's what I thought Dustin did last week, too. You know, he made some run, you know, some yards after the catch, getting down the field. These guys can really put some strain on your defense with the way they run in the middle of the field.
You and Bill Belichick obviously have been greatly influenced by Bill Parcells, and he's had an impact on both of your careers. Can you just talk about the impact that he's had on the game? I mean, his coaching tree is wide-ranging now, and just some of the other things that, you know, he brought to the game and all the time that he's been around it.
Well, I mean, I think, and you know, one of the things I can say, you know, clearly is that I think that the tree, you know, that Coach Parcells has had, you know, the coaching tree, and you look at it, and it's, you know, now with Sean Payton and Todd Haley and myself and Coach Belichick and, you know, Eric Mangini and these people, there's a lot of similar styles. You know, we're all in that, you know, the way we approach our football team is one, you know, I mean, I know from my end, anytime we played against the Patriots, I mean, there's nothing but the utmost respect that way. And, you know, in that, you know, we really respect the type of football team that they are, and that's what we want to be here. So, I mean, I think that a large part of that has to do with the way you've been raised in this business, and, you know, I owe all that to Coach Parcells, and I think, you know, I feel safe to say that some of the other people on that tree would say the same thing.
Pepper Johnson was telling a funny story yesterday that the first meeting he had, Parcells had with Pepper and the other rookies that year, he walked in and said, "You guys aren't worth crap." And, you know, he was hard on Pepper for 13 years. He never let up on him. Is he that way if you're an assistant coach with him? Is he just as hard on you guys?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's hard on the assistant coaches, too. And, you know, I it's funny because, you know, I've gotten a chance to see both sides now, and that I was that assistant coach that that he was hard on. And now, you know, I see him a little differently right now. So, but, you know, he is that way. It's his, you know, I think with Coach, you know, one of the big things is not getting comfortable, you know, and making sure that the people around you don't get too comfortable. Comfortable cannot be a good thing all the time. So that's one of the things I think that we learned. And, you know, I can remember him having that conversation with a few rookie groups.
Now, when you scout the Patriots now, I think from a receiver distribution standpoint, maybe it's a little different from what it was last year. You know, Moss and Welker are seeing fewer passes, and some of the other guys are seeing more passes. Does that make it, I guess, more difficult to scout since they're spreading it as they are?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think just because they're getting more people involved, and anytime you're getting those kind of people involved, you know, with touches the way they are, it makes it more difficult. You can't take every one of them away during the course of the game. It's just hard to do that. And I think that, you know, they're doing a good job of spreading it around. Obviously, Tom, you know, has a lot of confidence in his group out there right now because he's getting the ball to all of them, and, you know, they're all contributing that way.
Coach, you described their defensive front as being stout. I'm just wondering, how different is it to prepare for that front without a Ty Warren and without a Richard Seymour, just kind of having Vince there with two new guys?
Well, no, I mean, and again, no, you can't take anything from those two players. I mean, Ty Warren and you know, Richard Seymour, two outstanding football players. And, you know, we've lost a couple of football players here recently, you know, that are good football players, too. And when you take those players away from a defense, you know, it obviously makes a difference. But, you know, they bring in experience with, you know, with Gerard Warren. And, you know, they certainly, Brace is a guy that I really liked, you know, during the draft process, big physical guy. I mean, they're just hard people to move in there. And I think, you know, the two players, when you know, Vince aside, meaning, you know, Vince is going to factor in the game. There's no question about it because he's a big, strong person and the guy, you know, really has a good motor for a big man. But the two players that benefit the most from having those big, strong guys out there are, Spikes and Mayo. And, you know, you see those guys around and they're making almost every tackle out there on the field. So I think that, those are the guys that are benefiting from those big, strong guys up front.
Yes, we're good, Coach. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Tony.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it.
All right, so that's Tony Sparano, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, with members of the Patriots media from earlier today at Gillette Stadium. I mean, you know, here's the thing about Coach Sparano. You know, he seems like certainly a knowledgeable enough guy. Brought here under, you know, Bill Parcells. Thrust into a role that he may arguably or may not have been ready for. And yet, you'd have to say that I think all in all, last year he did a pretty good job with the team, even though they, you know, did not make the playoffs. I don't think, really can't see where anybody in Miami would have too many issues with the coach, that it's really all about trying to get personnel built up in Miami. He seems like a pretty straightforward, you know, football guy. Yeah, sure, there's some coach speak in there, but I get the impression that Sparano is a team guy, that he's on the same page with what they want to do organizationally speaking in Miami. And even though he's not really a glamorous, glitterati kind of guy, he concerns me. You know, he concerns me from a competitiveness standpoint. I mean, he's a guy who's, you know, been at the low levels. I mean, he's a guy that's been, you know, high school, college, low levels of the pros, and all of a sudden now he's thrown into the highest level that you can attain in this profession, and that is head coach of an NFL team. But he still seems to be the same Tony Sparano, I guess, that he was in the past, and without having known really who he was in the past. I get that impression just by listening to him, and so therefore, I'm concerned about the Dolphins strictly from a competitive point of view. Here's a guy who's going to retain his edge, who's going to retain his hunger, who's going to retain his drive, because he really hasn't had it before. And he doesn't really have it now, but that's not to keep him from pushing to get it, because he's been a pusher and an overachiever his entire life. I like people who overachieve. I will take an overachiever any day over a person who has talent, but may or may not utilize that talent to the best of their ability. I want someone who's ready to, you know, peel the cartilage off a bone, you know, like a dog on a you know, on a bone. I want someone who's ready to just do whatever it is, whatever it takes to get the job done and be a team player with it. Might not have the most talent, but it's got a heart. Well, in this instance, the size of a football. And Sparano seems to me to be that kind of guy, and that's why I think as Patriots fans, you should be somewhat concerned about, you know, yeah, the rivalry with the Jets is certainly burgeoning, there's no question. But let's not forget about the Miami Dolphins. Miami is still and was my selection to win the AFC East this year. A lot of people said, what, are you nuts? I just thought Miami's schedule played out better. I like Miami's personnel. I think Chad Henne can be a very good quarterback. Brandon Marshall helped sort of seal the deal for me. And then when I found out they were hiring Mike Nolan as their defensive coordinator, which they've done, and we've already seen improvements on the defensive side of the ball, you know, from the Dolphins, this is a team that I think you can look at right now and say, you know what, I can see this team getting better as this season progresses. I can see it. Let's see what we can find out then. Andy Kent covers the Dolphins for Dolphins.com, and he joins us here inside Patriots Playbook. Andy, sure appreciate your taking a few minutes here. I know you're kind of up against it doing some of your own interview work, so thank you for visiting with us.
Oh, my pleasure. It allows me to get out into the, well, I would normally say the beautiful sunshine of South Florida, but it's pouring down here right now, so
well,
I'm going to try to stay dry with you while we do this.
The rain is coming this way, so hopefully it'll be all cleared by the time we get ready to play on Monday night. I was just going on about Tony Sparano and listening to the conference call that he had with our media here earlier today. What are your impressions overall of him in terms of being a team player and buying into the system and the way that the Dolphins want to do things nowadays?
Oh, he's definitely established a solid kind of system here and a solid team atmosphere now in his third season, and the players, this is a guy that the players just love to play for, and he doesn't pull any punches. He's a straightforward guy with them in meetings and individual meetings, and if you've ever seen him in the locker room after a game, especially after a win. I mean, he's about as fiery a guy as you can imagine. He just doesn't do it as much in public with us in the media. But, he has the team believing in his system, in Nolan's system, in Henning's system. And, again, no one player is above or better than the team.
I certainly get that impression from him, and I do see this team in Miami as a team that has room for improvement, that you can see can continue to improve. What are the early three-week returns, not only from members of the media, but from fans? What kind of feedback are you getting on this team? Is this a team that people expect to be competitive right down to the end?
Oh, definitely. And that was kind of the feeling coming in. It's just, you know how football season goes. I mean, week to week, everybody's feelings change, and the fans down here are pretty fickle. If you were to tell them, at the beginning of the season that they'd be 2-1 heading into this New England Patriots game, they'd be thrilled. Because having opened on the road at Buffalo, granted Buffalo is down right now, but still, anytime you play at Buffalo, it's not fun. And then at Minnesota against a team that was, minutes away from going to the Super Bowl, and they pull out those wins, they'd be thrilled. But the fact that they were 2-0 and then let one slip away against the Jets, now everybody's a little bit upset again. But the general feedback is they're going to be in it right to the end. I mean, their defense is a lot better than it was last year. They're faster. They're more athletic. They're much better at tackling, which was a killer for them last season. And then the offense, again, it was kind of slow to start in those first two games. But if you saw that Monday night game, I mean, Chad Henne throws for a career high 363 yards, and that's against the Jets defense that was number one in the league last year.
Right.
And if they see more of that, people want to see more of Chad Henne to Brandon Marshall, the big free agent or the big trade that they got in the offseason. And when you put all those pieces together and the schedule softens up for them a little bit at the end, the consensus is that this division could be like, if you remember 2 years ago when it came down to that last day and they finished tied with the Patriots but won the tiebreaker and eliminated the Jets on the same day. It's going to come down to the last game, I think.
Andy Kent covers the Dolphins for Dolphins.com, visiting with us here inside the Patriots playbook. First couple of games this year, Buffalo and Minnesota, you sort of alluded to this. Defense obviously led the way, only allowed 10 points in both of those games. But against the Jets this past weekend, over 400 yards of total offense. Which team do you really feel like this Miami team is right now?
I'm leaning towards what you saw in the first 2 weeks. I think what happened Sunday night was just kind of a perfect storm of Brian Schottenheimer coming up with a genius scheme to slow down the speed of that Dolphins defense, and it just made sure that Sanchez got rid of the ball fast. He was taking two-step, three-step drops and making quick reads, and before the outside linebackers could even get around the edge, the ball was gone. Lots of teams are probably going to look at doing that the same way. But I think that the Dolphins, tried to maybe they outfought themselves a little bit with what was going on with Sanchez and switched their fronts around a little bit and got away from what was working against Favre and working against the Bills. They go back to what they were doing. That defense that you saw in the first 2 weeks is what you're going to see the rest of the year, especially Carlos Dansby, what he's meant to this team as an offseason acquisition. And if they get Channing Crowder back in there with them, you'll see Dansby more involved in hitting those tight ends and not letting the tight ends come free as much as they have in the last 2 weeks.
What is Channing Crowder's status right now?
We just left the bubble, the practice bubble right now, so he was out there like he was last week. I think he's kind of limited, but they had him in positional drills, and they had him in individual drills. Last week he was running the scout team. This week he was doing more, so he's coming back from a groin injury, and much like what the Jets were trying to do with Darrell Revis, they don't want to rush him back from that, but we'll find out more. I guess they don't have to give us an injury report today.
Right.
So tomorrow they'll give us a better idea, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him out there on Sunday.
Let me tell you that, honestly, I may be one of the few people that actually knew who Cameron Wake was before he got to Miami. And when I found out that he was a part of this team, I'm like, look out. Are you guys surprised? Pleased? What are the reactions to Cameron Wake and what he's meant to this team defensively thus far?
I think everybody's pleased. I mean, they got a glimpse of what he could do last year. 5.5 sacks and limited action, backing up Jason Taylor and Joey Porter.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew that he's fast and he can rush the passer. That was never in doubt. It was, could he be a complete linebacker? Could he set the edge? Could he do well against the run? And he's showing that ability the first three games. He's not only getting to the quarterback, but he's holding his own against a pretty good running back. So, I mean, he had a couple of hits on Adrian Peterson, you know, not too many people got a lot of hits on him last week in the fourth quarter, but he did pretty well against him. Got some hits on Sean Green on Sunday night, and so he's turning into that complete linebacker that they wanted to have, and that I think that the coaches saw enough in him in OTAs and training camp, and that made them comfortable with the decision to let Jason Taylor go.
Mm-hmm. Well, flipping it over to the other side quickly while we got a couple of minutes left here, Henny threw for, you mentioned, I think it was 363 against the Jets on Sunday night. Do you feel like this is a guy that should be doing that a little bit more consistently than he has done it? Or is this something that really is kind of expected of him and part of the reason maybe why they went out and got a guy like Brandon Marshall in the offseason?
I think it's what they expected of him. I mean, nobody's ever questioned this kid's arm strength. He's got a cannon for an arm, and he showed that last year. It was just the same as what the Jets were trying to do with Sanchez. I mean, a young guy, you can't experience is just, it's priceless. And, I mean, the more chances he gets to see defenses, he gets to see different blitzes and recognize them, the better he's going to get. And the biggest advantage he has, which he had last year and now he has again this year, is he's got Chad Pennington in the quarterback room with him, on the sideline with him, letting him see things that other young quarterbacks aren't going to see. And Sunday night, he looked a lot more comfortable out there, and he's getting a lot closer, him and Brandon Marshall, to being perfectly on the same page. And when that happens, a lot of opposing defenses are going to be a little bit concerned because he knows he can throw the ball up, and Marshall's going to get it. Marshall obviously knows that he's going to get the ball to him anywhere on the field.
Right.
And between that and the fact that he doesn't turn the ball over, he holds on to the ball well, he doesn't make bad decisions right now, that's what the Dolphins coaches are wanting to see, a kid that can deliver the big play but also not hurt them with a big play going against them.
Right. Finally, Andy, what do you feel like concerns the Dolphins the most about the Patriots coming to South Florida next Monday night?
Well, I would tell you basically what I just wrote about that's up on Dolphins.com right now, and to me, I think their biggest concern is those two rookie tight ends of yours.
Mm-hmm.
Fernandez and Gronkowski, because last year tight ends killed this defense. This year they seem to have tightened up a little bit against them, but still Vasante Shenko, even though he didn't get in the end zone, he caught six balls for 86 yards, and Dustin Keller in the first half of that Sunday night game was, you know, wide open all over the field. So seeing what Aaron Hernandez has been able to do, I think he leads the Patriots in yards per catch with 16.2.
Right.
And then that big kid, Gronkowski, when you get down to near the red zone, I mean, there aren't too many big guys that can match up against him. That is going to be a concern. And I'm talking to Sperano, talking to their safeties, Jeremiah Bell. They want to get off of these tight ends right at the beginning of the game. They want to hit them, and they want to knock them off their routes, and they don't want them to become a factor in the first or second quarter that they're going to have to adjust to later on.
Interesting. Good stuff. Hey, thanks for a few minutes of your time, Andy. We sure appreciate it. Thanks for adjusting your schedule and continue dodging those raindrops, will you?
Oh, anytime. And just as a reminder for your listeners, you can also read me on AOL Fan House. I'm the AFC East blogger for Fan House, so I have to stay on top of your team and the Jets and the Bills as well as the Dolphins.
You know what? I was just going to say that, and frankly, I wasn't sure if it was the same Andy Kent, so there you go.
Oh, it is.
Very good. Well, you know what, then? We're going to do this. We'll try to get you here on the program a little bit later on this season. How's that?
Sure. Yeah, not a problem. I'd be glad to.
Thank you, Andy. Sure appreciate the time today.
All right, guys. Take care.
You got it. Andy Kent again from Dolphins.com, and also covering the AFC East for AOL Fan House. So it's pretty cool. Hey, note to Kevin Collins, right, about Andy Kent and AOL Fan House. That's good stuff. So make sure you look for his stuff on both of those particular sources. All right, we're out of time for the program. Shop Talk is coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio. Once again, tomorrow in the program, two fantastic guests. We'll have both John Clayton, the professor himself from ESPN, and Russell Baxter from ESPN, the NFL research coordinator who heads up their NFL coverage for the networks. Both inside the playbook tomorrow. If you've got questions, fire them off early. We'll ask them of the two guys, and we'll do it same Pat's time, same Pat's channel tomorrow.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network. All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com Radio.